The Growing Destinations podcast is brought to you by Experience Rochester. Learn more about Minnesota's third largest city, which is home to Mayo Clinic and features wonderful recreational and entertainment opportunities, by visiting experiencerochestermn.com.
We make all our own syrups. And then when you experience that, and then what cocktails truly can be when you make your stuff fresh like they did way back in the day, it is stunning, and not a lot of places do it. You're starting to see more and more, and I think it's going to continue to trend that way. People are going to be making more of their own fresh ingredients and in the end getting better cocktails.
People nowadays are willing to pay for quality, and that, and they don't care. They want instant gratification rather than everything else. And I think craft cocktails gives them more than what a rum and Coke can do.
Welcome to the Growing Destinations podcast, where we take a deep dive into destination development and focus on a wide range of topics, from tourism and entertainment to economic development and entrepreneurism and much more. I'm your host, Bill Von Bank. Craft cocktails are all the rage. Today I speak with the owners of Bitter and Pour, a popular cocktail lounge in Rochester, Minnesota. Andy Ferguson, or Fergie, and Josh Kral are familiar faces at Bitter and Pour. Along with two other partners, they opened the downtown Rochester hotspot in 2018. In our conversation, we discuss the history of craft cocktails, a specialty of theirs, and why they've become so popular. We talk about the importance of fresh ingredients and consistency. With 40 craft cocktails on their menu, they want to be innovators, not trend followers. Andy Ferguson, Josh Kral, welcome to the Growing Destinations podcast.
Thanks for having us.
We're on location at a favorite locale in downtown Rochester called Bitter and Pour. Before we talk about this really cool bar, I want to learn a little bit more about both of you. Andy?
I've been in bartending for about 23 years. Moved to Rochester, I want to say 18 years ago. Managed a lot of bars, slung a lot of drinks, and just got tired of working for other people. Was ready to do my own. Eventually would like to own one on an island, but we're not there yet.
Josh, how about you?
I started bartending probably about 18 years ago. He was the one that gave me my first opportunity way back at Westfire. Since spent some time at the Kaler Hotel, working under some guys that have been doing it for 40, 45 years. A little bit brief stint at Michael's, and then really fine-tuned my craft at Pescara, working with some of their staff there.
And this is all in Rochester, Minnesota?
All in Rochester.
I started in Winona, and then I did the Twin Cities, and then Rochester.
So in Minnesota, though?
Yep.
Okay, yeah. Great. A few years back, you both became partners, along with a couple other guys, and opened Bitter and Pour. Tell me about that process, and take me back to when you opened, and what year was that?
2018 is when we opened. December of 2018. We took the space over in June of 18. Did most of the work down here ourselves, which I will never paint anything ever again in my life. and then opened, you know, had some struggles along the way, and then COVID, of course, and now it's doing better than ever.
Josh, can you talk about the experience from your perspective opening in 2018 and forming a partnership with three other guys? Was it easy to do that?
Yeah, I think so. It was actually never part of my life goals. Never wanted to be a business owner. I was just, you know, happy with the goals I had set. And I had a way of reaching them, I think. But Fergie actually reached out a couple of weeks, maybe in a month after they had planned. So everything was already in motion. And I was the last one on board. And it definitely was a roller coaster ride, I would say. The build-up was a lot of fun. had some fun with the sledgehammer in here. Jackhammer even, taking out some concrete. Punching holes through walls, drank a lot of beers and cocktails over the experience.
Got an early start.
Actually, he called me saying I heard a rumor, and I lied to him and said, nope, not true. And then about a week later, I called him and said, hey, you want to come work for me? And he's like, nah, I don't want late nights. And I was like, I think I called him back 2 days later. I said, you want to be our business partner?
Well, let's talk about Bitter and Pour. It's a really cool bar. I call it a speakeasy because that's just how I describe it. But you have a much better description of it on your website and I'm sure in your elevator speech. So tell us more about Bitter and Pour.
I think it's more of a cross between a cocktail lounge and a speakeasy. You know, it's tucked away, hidden. But then, I mean, cocktail features is what we do. I mean, we have 40 craft cocktails on the menu. alone, which is more than a lot of places.
Do you do food too?
No food. We tried doing charcuterie boards and a couple small plates right out of the gate, but we were throwing away more than what we were going through. And our goal was never even to make money on it. It was more to break even and have people drink more. But thank God we got rid of it, because we wouldn't have the cooler space for 40 craft cocktails in the back.
Yeah, it actually backfired on us. It would get people to camp out a little bit longer so we couldn't turn the tables and make that money.
Since 2018, how has business been for the bar? Obviously, you've had to deal with the COVID pandemic, but in general, when you open till now, are you happy with the results, COVID aside?
Absolutely. I it's even hitting numbers beyond what I thought we would ever do. The first year, you know, you got your bumps in the road, you're building a brand and a reputation. So it was decent, but I definitely thought there was room for improvement. And then COVID hit. So that was 7 months of misery for us. At one point, we even reopened and shut down because we got tired of working so much to lose money. So we're like, let's just wait till fall. And then January 2021, when they allowed us to reopen after Thanksgiving and Christmas, things have just skyrocketed. I mean, we've almost doubled what we did the first year.
I visited and I'm inspired by just your menu of craft cocktails. And I want to dig deeper into that craze of craft cocktails. It's all the rage, not just here in Rochester, Minnesota, but globally. Tell us more about that specific part of your business, because it's big and you guys do it really well.
I personally think people are just starting to rediscover them. Our country fell far behind during Prohibition. You know, way back when, they had great cocktails and that all went away. A lot of the best bartenders in the country at that time actually moved to like island bars in Mexico, tropical areas where they could continue doing what they're doing. And then when the Prohibition was repealed, all of a sudden we can make drinks again, but nobody knew how to do it. And then you started seeing cheap ingredients, like, you know, stuff like grenadine's one night. I like to point out a lot. If you buy that on a store shelf, a lot of them are going to be high fructose corn syrup with red food coloring. And they say cherry flavored, which is not what grenadine is. True grenadine is a reduction of pomegranate with a little bit of sugar to sweeten it. We finish ours with orange blossom water.
So you make all your own syrups?
Yeah, we make all our own syrups. And then when you experience that, and then what cocktails truly can be when you make your stuff fresh like they did way back in the day, it is stunning. And not a lot of places do it. You're starting to see more and more. And I think it's going to continue to trend that way. People are going to be making more of their own fresh ingredients and in the end getting better cocktails. And the more people try new things, I think the bigger it will become. I think we're starting to see that too. Early on, not a lot of people would come down here. Not a lot of people knew who we are, but the more word of mouth gets out, everybody tries our great cocktails, they all want to come in. And on days we release new specials, they are huge hits. We just recently did that. Yeah, and they all blew it out of the water. I thought it was kind of cool.
Is there a clear definition on what a craft cocktail is?
I guess cocktail by definition is pretty simple. It's basically an old fashioned. So it's spirit, sugar, bitters, and dilution or water. You can go different directions on that, I would say. But I think what makes it craft is definitely using those fresh ingredients, homemade ingredients, and you know, pairing that with like a craft or boutique-y spirit really helps out too.
I think adding exact measurements, like we get compliments all the time from our guests about they come here and they can order the Moulin Rouge from any six of our bartenders and it's going to taste exactly the same no matter who made it. Where every other bar in this town, everybody kind of free pours or makes it their own. Each bartender puts their own little spin on it, and it's like, well, the customers want consistency. Like they know this is how I like it. I don't want you to make it your way. I want the way it says it's supposed to be on the menu. And that's also a big thing for craft. I don't think you can call it craft if everybody's making it their own.
And really, to some point, aren't we talking about classic cocktails? Because a lot of these, the old fashioned, the Manhattans, the sidecar, the Negroni, don't they date back to the 1800s or the early 1900s?
Some of them do. A lot of them do, yeah. I'm starting to see new classics. I think it'd be great someday if we get bars replicating what we do and we can call a cocktail of our own a classic. I think that would be spectacular.
How do you get inspired to make or create new cocktails or just put a little different spin. Obviously, you have consistency on a number of your cocktails, but I have seen that you do create new cocktails here too.
Yeah, absolutely. I find inspiration in really weird places. One I'll point out, the Fergalicious, if anybody's familiar with that, it's got an ugly mug that only a mother could love on it. I actually got inspiration for that at a restaurant in Florida. It was a lot like a Hard Rock Cafe. I forget what they're called. But I saw an image of Jimi Hendrix on the wall, and it was just like a shadow image. And I'm looking at it like, all right, I'm going to make a gin cocktail with Jimi Hendrix's face on it, and I call it the Jimi Hendrix. He had way too much hair, and the bitters ate through the stenciling, and it just disappeared soon. I found it super easy to do a bald guy that sits on there. One of his classic lines for the ladies, better let you tell that one, huh?
It's the sexiest drink on the menu.
One of the things that's really cool about Bitter and Pour that I've heard is the amount of celebrities that pass through. Can you talk about that?
I wouldn't say we have a ton, but we've had Gerard Butler come in, Jim Gaffigan, the guy who hosts Whose Line Is It Anyway? Riley Rafe has been in, plays for the Vikings, or did play for the Vikings. I usually try to treat them like I don't know who they are, so that I know when I hate when I go out and I have to shake everybody's hands and give all the hugs, so I imagine what it's like for them.
And some of those acts actually appear at the Mayo Civic Center, so you can kind of determine that they're coming from a specific point.
Correct. If they're not coming because they performed, it's the Mayo Clinic, and so I think they deserve even a little more privacy.
I want to also talk about your fabulous-looking bar. I think you call it an altar or an homage, or talk through the uniqueness of the bar itself.
When we set out, one of the things I always wanted, since I'm not the connoisseur of cocktails, I'm a connoisseur, I'm not the expert cocktail guy, I wanted to have my own little, and I always said I just want to have a sexy, swanky bar. And so we just kind of rolled with that. Josh did a lot of the grunt work, but he was like, okay. He didn't really care what the finished product looked like as long as it was done.
What trends are you seeing in the spirits industry right now?
A lot of mezcal is starting to be one people always ask about, and spicy is another one for spirit or flavor. Those are the ones we get asked a lot about.
I think the biggest trend right now, which is super annoying to me, people want what they can't get, what you can't find. Those super hard to find and allocated bourbons, they only make so much of them, and once they're gone, they're gone. That's a big trend right now. Rum's growing for sure.
If you're a bourbon collector and not a drinker, quit it.
Bring it to Bitter and Pour. Yeah. How do you stay relevant on trends and what people want?
I don't know if we really follow trends. Josh is the master creator, and he just keeps creating, and people keep wanting to try. Like he's built the reputation of.
We want to be more innovators, not trend followers. I'm pretty skeptical on a lot of them that come out. Like if you rewind, say it's the year 2000 again, and Yag Bomb is the newest hottest thing, we'll probably look at it, be like, is that really what we want in this establishment? Probably not. But we'll look at Jägermeister and say that is a spectacular spirit. And it definitely needs to be used in cocktails.
Your Facebook page, you always have some great posts. And I recently noticed one, I think it was for National Nurses Week. You created a unique promotion around that. Why don't you tell us about that?
Yeah, that was a lot of fun. My wife's actually a nurse, so she helped us out with that one a lot. And we have a syrup that we've used in the past. It's a butterfly pea flower. So what it is, it's got a deep blue color to it. But when you alter the pH, it'll warp from a purplish to pinkish color. And you can do a lot of fun things presentationally with that. And I thought this was a great way to do it. So we just pre-made some, was it daiquiris?
Yep.
Put them in a blood bag, made it look like an IV bag. Actually rolled that out for a nurse group. They had a private tasting prior to that. And I diagnosed them all with margaritis. asked them their symptoms, recommended a batch of 30 milligrams. And I put that syrup in there, shook it up, changed colors. And that was a lot of fun.
For the bartenders, they liked it. Us servers did not. We had to do all the work.
Memorable, and I bet it was a talker.
Yeah.
Hard seltzers, can we talk about that? They've exploded over the past couple of years. What do you think of that, and do you serve them here?
We will never buy one and serve it here. We do make our own. We have the means to carbonate any beverage we want to. I think honestly, the seltzer has definitely peaked in the market. I know
it's Sam the fastest Adams, declining.
Yeah, Sam Adams over-projected the market, and they had to dump millions of cases. I think that all happened during COVID. Everybody's drinking at home and drinking a lot all day. I remember I definitely did that. And they started to want a lower calorie, lower alcohol alternative. And then once everybody started going back to work or realizing they're drinking too much, they kind of quit. And I think people that were late on that trend are definitely feeling it.
What are some tips you have for consumers wanting to create and build a home bar? Like me.
Yeah. I've definitely gone through that where I've had probably my back bar was every bit as big as what we have at Bitter and Pour. Some days you see new things and you want to buy it, you want to have it. You definitely need to be well-stocked if you want to create any cocktail at any given minute. But at the same time, you might get some dirty looks from your wife from having too much booze around.
Avoid pre-mixes.
Yeah, there's a lot of good sources. You know, you can get on the internet and find out how to make anything, really. I'll stick with classics, I would say, and make small adjustments to them, and you'll make some great cocktails in the end.
I've been on YouTube quite a bit during COVID, and I stumbled across a few cocktail channels that I started to watch. I'm fascinated not only by the conversation around how to make them or the right spirits to buy, because they all have their preference. But for me, part of the excitement about going to these channels was the history behind a cocktail, because it's competitive. Like, who was the first to create this cocktail or that cocktail? Do you get tied up in the history behind the cocktails, and does that help you create new ones?
Josh, probably a lot more than me. I don't do the research that he does or the background. I find stuff. He can taste and smell something and tell you pretty much exactly what's in it. Or I look at somebody and I can tell what flavor profile it is and if I like it or I don't like it. And then I just talk like I know what I'm talking about. And
a good game.
And people believe it and buy it. So, I mean, I don't have the history knowledge, but like Josh can usually tell you, like if you ask something about a certain spirit or a certain cocktail, he almost always has the history and the knowledge behind it.
Can have a lot of fun with that sometimes too. You know, in the end, if the cocktail tastes great, doesn't really matter where it came from. But we recently did a fundraiser for Red Drop Resources called Margarita Madness. You were tasked with choosing a decade and then coming up with a backstory on your margarita. We went overboard. Like the origin of the margarita is very much in debate. There's talk that it was developed in Mexico. Some say Dallas, you know, could have been named after somebody named Margarita, or the Spanish translation is actually Daisy, which is kind of what a sour cocktail would in the back in the day was named a Daisy. We went over the top and we chose the 79 AD decade. took place during the Pompeii eruption, and I had a nice blood orange magma color bottom to my cocktail layered with ocean blue. And our story was, during the eruption, all the survivors of Pompeii had to craft life rafts out of mint, and I had a mint disc floating on top, and we used surface tension with 151 droplets around the side, and that mint disc would shoot around the cocktail. And we said that they had to craft rafts on mint and sail where they landed on Spain. And they made this cocktail with the tequila that they had on sale at their Costco or something. I don't remember what I said. And they landed in Spain and they called it the Daisy.
Do you both have go-to drinks?
Yes. Well, Josh is always the next one, his favorite. I definitely have favorite. I'm a bourbon guy generally. Like, just give me a bourbon and a big ice cube. But I love a good old-fashioned. I've really been getting into mezcal lately. I'm always pushing a couple of drinks that aren't on the menu that I love of mezcal.
Well, what's so popular about mezcal? Because I've seen the reporting on it, I've seen the trends, and that it is very popular right now.
I think it's just a uniqueness. You get a lot of people sit there and tell you they don't like tequila, and then you sneak them a cocktail with a smoky tequila, and all of a sudden they're like, "Oh, what is this? Oh, it's mezcal. What's mezcal?" And then they're just blown away that they're getting a different flavor of than just regular tequila.
Earlier this year, Rochester Magazine honored Bitter and Pour with several Best of Awards, including Best Bar Service, Best Bar, and Best Cocktail, First World Problem. How important is that recognition to your business?
The team awards are very important. I mean, it says everything about the establishment, all of our workers. And I mean, if our goal is to constantly be striving to be the best, having those awards helps solidify our standing.
Josh, did you create the first world problem? And if so, tell us about it.
It's our previous best cocktail. I believe it was 2019. We won best cocktail, and that was a problem solver, which is our house old fashioned. So basically, I looked at that and proving that. So I barrel aged it for 60 days, which kind of enhances the sweetness, softens the hard edges, and adds a little bit of complexity to it. So, I wouldn't say I created it. It's still an old fashioned in the end, but it's just a fun new spin off of something that was already great.
Do you think the craft cocktail craze will stick around?
I do. I think the days of like the baby boomers who wanted as much for as little, people nowadays are willing to pay for quality and they don't care. They want instant gratification rather than everything else. And I think craft cocktails gives them more than what a rum and coke can do. Or
it's really an experience too.
Yeah, I agree.
So I went on TripAdvisor because I just wanted to know what people were thinking about Bitter and Pour. And first of all, they think you guys are great. But this one stood out for me from Chicago, Illinois. I've been to a lot of places, but the place is pretty unique. Bartenders are more like artists, and the drinks are some unheard of concoctions and some staples, but all are done with utmost care and amazing. My rich uncle sent me here and didn't disappoint me. This is what I really love about this. I walked in with 99 problems and left with no more than 10. When you read a review like that, give me some perspective about that, because that's just a great review.
It, again, just solidifies again what we're doing. It makes you feel like you're headed in the right direction and always, compass is pointing north.
I don't look into the good reviews as much as I should. It's the bad ones that really get to me.
Yeah.
I do appreciate those a lot.
There are a lot. I sourced them and on Yelp as well. There's a lot of great reviews. Before we wrap, give an idea of a cocktail that is underrated that people should try. Both of you.
I would say the Negroni. Worldwide, I believe it's the number two cocktail. Some of my favorite cocktails ever have been Negronis. Most recently for St. Patty's Day. It was more of a Boulevardier, but I would redo this again as a Negroni. I made a dandelion green vermouth with a dandelion root tincture. And then a Genetian root liqueur. It was absolutely stunning, very bitter, sweet up front, warming. And, around the world, like in Italy, especially Europe, people love Negronis or Americanos. They're kind of versions of that. And over here, you really don't see that as much. And I think that's something that more people should try.
Andy, how about you, an underrated cocktail that you think people should try?
I don't think I have an underrated cocktail. I have, for each individual guest, it's with craft cocktails, try something you normally wouldn't. Even here, we get so many people that are like, I want vodka or I want something sweet. I want something tart. And I'll say, oh, the Moulin Rouge. And then they will be, oh, there's gin in it. I don't want it. Get me anything else sweet, kind of sweet and fruity, but not too sweet. And I'll ring them in the Moulin Rouge. And then they come up, this is the best drink I ever had. What is it? I'm like, and I just say gin and I walk away, I do that. Or somebody says, I don't like this, but I want this flavor profile. Okay. And I'll get them the exact spirit they told me they don't like. And then when I tell them what it is, they're just flabbergasted. So I don't know if it's a set cocktail. I think people need to, when you're dealing with craft cocktails, I would definitely try more of the stuff you normally wouldn't try at a normal bar.
Well, you've sold me on that today. I want to thank Andy Ferguson and Josh Krall for the great conversation. Best of luck with Bitter and Pour, and keep pouring.
Thank you.
Buddy.
Thank you for tuning in to the Growing Destinations podcast. And don't forget to subscribe. This podcast is brought to you by Experience Rochester. Find out more about Rochester, Minnesota, and its growing arts and culture scene, its international culinary flavors, and award-winning craft beer, by visiting experiencerochestermn.com.